Welcome to this episode of PageCast at Kingsmead, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. I'm Michael Ward, and I have the pleasure of being joined at our book fair by Lloyd Bernard. Lloyd Bernard is the sports editor of News24.com and is the author of Miracle Men and Insights into the Rugby World Cup. His 2024 book is Twice the Glory, The Making of the Greatest Bok Team in History. I'm going to start by asking you, what was the last book you read and what will you be reading next?
Jeez, I don't know. Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me. I've finally got around to finishing Faf du Plessis's autobiography. And as someone who covered his career quite closely, almost in its entirety, that was good to get through. Jeez, I don't know. We're trying to finish the book now over the next month. So
we focused on
quite a heavy month. Yeah. So I'll probably be reading my own book about 17 times between now and the end of June. So get back to me after that.
Okay. So did you enjoy Faf's book?
I did. Yeah. Like I said, it was, I think it's you view it through a different lens when you've been quite close to it. You know, I followed Faf around the country, especially during his test captaincy, which he writes about quite a lot, seeing how much it all meant to him, seeing how, you know, perhaps unhappy he was with how it ended. And I felt like it was very honest. You know, you could see that from having been there in those moments, in the big moments in his career, and having covered them, and then seeing the way he took them on post-career, it was very clear that it was a very honest take of his own career.
Did he write it himself? Or
yeah, he did.
Did he have anybody?
No, he said, I think he did. He would have obviously had some editing help along the way, but it actually, I interviewed him for the book when it came out, which is obviously quite a while ago now. And it was almost a passion project that he did during lockdown. So when there was nothing else for these players to do, no games to play or training sessions to have, he kind of spent long hours into the night just writing. And it ended up being his book. Yeah.
Okay. Is he still playing or is he retired now? Is he doing domestic IPL sort of stuff?
So he's retired from Test cricket and ODI cricket. Was technically available for the T20 World Cup squad. Wasn't picked, but has just finished his IPL campaign with RCB. And Faf must be just getting close. Yeah,
he is getting up there now. But he fixed the hair, so he looks quite young still to this day.
I tell you what, if I move around anywhere, you know, a tenth of the way he does when I'm 40, you've done well, because he's in incredible shape.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. All right. Well, I just want to ask, what is the state of our nation sports-wise at the moment? I know that's quite a broad question, but if you can sort of touch on that, if you will.
Yeah, it's a good question, and it is quite broad because of all the different codes we have.
Exactly,
But I think the one thing that's common about all of the codes, whether you're talking Bok rugby, Proteas, Bafana, or even, you know, when the Olympics rolls around, no one quite celebrates victories like South Africans do. It is the one, it's such a cliche to say sport unites us now, because we've been saying it so much. But
Mandela quote,
But it really is the one thing that we all share, and we lose awfully as well.
We are terrible losers.
Don't get me wrong. We don't lose very well, but when we win, it's really quite special. So I think the state, as long as you have that, you know, as long as you have people who, you want people being angry when their team loses, it shows that they still care. And as long as you have that, I think you've always got your sport is in a healthy state. Yes, there's areas across the board and all the codes where there's obvious room for improvement with certain things, from administration to transformation to, you know, even just ability and winning games. But I think as long as you have people who care the way that they do, and the money coming in through broadcasts and the kind of, you know, national interest in these products, then I think we have to say that it's in a healthy state.
I think you always get the sense that we need it more than the supporters of the other teams, whether it's the All Blacks or, you know, I feel like we always need the win more than their fans need the win, because they usually have things going pretty well in their country. We need our teams to be doing well to give us some sort of positivity about our country, whether everything is not really so good at the moment in the country, but we need that win more than the other fans might need that win. What do you think about that?
It's certainly the narrative in the Springbok setup.
Yeah.
You know, you'd like to see it more at Proteus level and at
Bafana level specifically. Yeah.
You know, those two teams in particular, you find yourself wondering, you know, do the Proteus want this as much as other teams? But no, on the Springbok front, that's absolutely true. I think that's been embedded in this group of players under Rassie and Jacques for the last 6 years. There was a very clear decision taken in 2018. That what you guys are doing is about far more than this rugby team, that you are representing an entire nation of people. And that's been a common theme of this box side for 6 years now. So no, I would agree with that fully. I mean, we you know, I wonder if it would be the same if things were going great in the country. And I think it would. I think there's just such a passion when it comes to this sport. You know, sports, Protea sport and Bok rugby and everything just coincided with, you know, the Rainbow Nation and the dawn of democracy. There was this new chapter of South African sport that came with that.
Yeah.
And I think that had a big part to play in why it's so important.
Yeah.
You know, 95.
Yeah.
And it just aligned itself with this journey of a new democracy and a new country. So the things are, you know, almost inseparable. You can't separate South Africa and its sport.
Yeah. Do you think if we hadn't have won that 95 World Cup, let's say we went out first round in South Africa, the same sort of trajectory would have happened? Or do you think we needed that 95 win first for the rest of it to happen? Or do you think we would have been fine nonetheless, whether we had gone knocked out first round or won?
Yeah, that's hard to speculate on because, you know, it wasn't like everything has been all rosy since 95.
Yeah.
There have been some very, very dark Bok days
since
then. So it's not like that catapulted this thing.
I know, yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, if you look at, 95 was incredibly special.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was probably, you know, 8, 9 years old when that happened. And I still remember it very, very well. It was just a huge moment. So, yes, I think in terms of the overall Bok product, of course, in terms of the standing on the international stage, in terms of how the Boks have been viewed since then, 95 was obviously massive in establishing the brand to being what it is today. But I think they still would have, you know, if they had lost that World Cup, they still would have had the success that they had down the line, I think, because there have been so many times along the journey of even going back to that 2003 World Cup where, you know, that was a bad one. And you've got to kind of push reset after all of these eras where things aren't going well.
Okay. Well, so my next question, I think you've pretty much answered that one in your previous question about sport uniting South Africans and why you think sports unite South Africans. But I think you might have probably touched on that already with your previous answer. So I want to ask you about Twice the Glory. Can you tell us a bit about that, how it's going, how it might differ from Miracle Men, if at all, or same sort of formula that you're following, how much insight you've had, how much you've been able to follow the team? And,
So I'm just very grateful that, you know, I'm doing this one with a colleague of mine, Kaniso Traku, who is an absolute superstar, one of our senior writers at News 24. And he was at the 2023 Rugby World Cup for us and covered that tournament start to finish and did an absolutely superb job. So I'm doing it with him. This is his first book and it's going well. I mean, Trucks has, you know, got a lot of stuff down from, you know, while it was still fresh in the mind when he got back from the World Cup. He's put a lot of that kind of anecdotal stuff down, the memories that he has from being on the ground with the Boks, which is obviously going to be incredibly valuable because you want to bring that to life in this book. You know, you want to take the reader to Paris
behind the scenes
so that they can get a feeling of what really happened there.
Structurally,
I think it's documenting not so much the 2023 Rugby World Cup, but the last 6 years of Bok rugby. And we're arguing that, you know, this by all accounts is the greatest Bok team of all time, under Rassie and Jacques. And so, you know, you want to be speaking to, the same way we did for Miracle Men, interviewing guys who were part of that setup, who were part of that squad, and the coaches and as much of the coaching staff as we can get, and really get those insights as to what happened in that journey over the last 6 years to take this team from 2018 to, you know, to now, where they're the kind of envy of the rugby
world. Probably the greatest rugby dynasty of all time.
You've
got the All Blacks there for 2011. They did have a good run there, but
In the Springbok context, you would think you would, you know, it'd be difficult to to vouch for. And you've obviously got the Mallet side that went 18-0 and equaled the world record. You've obviously got Jake White's 2007 side that was, you know, flawless in that World Cup, even if it didn't face the strongest opposition at the tournament. Yeah. But you're going to do really well to find a team that has achieved more and just been as dominant as the Bucks have. Yeah. And it's interesting with the Springboks. And the reason, if their win percentage was better in between World Cups, it would be a no-brainer.
The greatest team ever. Yeah.
But they've, you know, through the experimentation and through the trying different things.
All the new players, young players.
You know, you lose a few games along the way. So I think, you know, Jacques comes out of there and Rassie comes out of there with a modest kind of 60-odd percentage win record. Which on the surface is lower than, you know, a Mallet or potentially even a Jake, I'm not sure. But, you know, when you factor in World Cup, when you factor in no hopers, losing away to Italy, you know, just setting record defeats, and then in 18 months it's turned around to world champions in 2019, you win the most difficult Lions series, you know, in 2021 behind closed doors, no fans at home.
Yeah.
And then you do it again in 2023 where you win all of your playoffs by a single point. I mean, it's just, you really can't script it.
Yeah.
And when you factor in what they've overcome and, you know, just how dominant the side is now, when you've got the whole of the world rugby, you know, changing doors and fighting with you and arguing with you. I mean, I know Rassie does a lot of it to himself.
Yeah.
and he'll acknowledge as much. But yeah, I think the greatest box side of all time, and we're just trying to tell that story of why and how they got there, and you know what they actually did on the ground to change things.
Okay. Do you, speaking about interviews with players and coaches, do you have any standout interviews or players that you always enjoy interviewing, or somebody that just always you always want to interview again and again and again?
Yeah, sports journalism is a weird thing because so many guys at press conferences speak in the cliches and give you the
exactly.
We always focus on the next game. You know, we're going to give it 110%.
All glory to God.
So, but you do get your gems in between. I don't, you know, with this particular book, we've got some good interviews in the bag already. I don't want to, you know, until we've transcribed and actually put them down, I don't want to oversell anything. But Jacques was great. You know, we've got him, and you know, most of the box of the current era actually are pretty good because they, it means so much to them, I think. And, you know, they've been so intimately involved with this process that when you do catch them, and speak to them about what they've done, it's brilliant. I mean, even you know, chasing the sun and just watching that, you can see that it's very, very real and raw. It's not speaking in those cliches. Yeah. And that's true for a lot of this group of players, I think, just because they're not under pressure.
Yeah.
They've got it done. They can speak freely.
They want to share.
And they want that. It's for everybody, you know, so they kind of want to share their journey with everyone. Yeah, you get guys who are good value. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Okay. Before we wrap up, I want to ask you how you got into sports journalism. It's not on my script yet, but did you play sports growing up? Have you always been into sports?
Yeah.
Do you enjoy sports journalism?
I love it, man. We have the best job in the world, and I'm incredibly lucky to be doing what I do. You know, just being in the right place at the right time over the years and taking your chances when they come. I think I was actually having this conversation with Jane in the ride from the airport yesterday, and Jane from Jonathan Bull.
Yeah.
And she asked me the same question, and it was, you know, I think for 95% of the guys and girls who got into sports journalism who are at this kind of level, I think, who work for daily newspapers, devote their lives to sports journalism.
Yeah.
90% of them, I think, started out wanting to be like pro players.
100%.
100%. Like, I mean, my earliest memories are playing cricket, you know, a garden and saying to be a protein.
Same.
And this inevitable moment hits you probably like
a humble little team. That's exactly it. I was the exact same.
And you realize that you're not good enough and that your dreams aren't going to come through. And then you have to, and I remember thinking at the time and towards the end of high school, you know, well, how else can I get as close to this team as possible? And then it was physiotherapy was the next thing. Okay. I could be a team physio. And then the science and maths marks and you know, dash that dream. And then it was, well, what if I do this? You know, so I took, I made that decision very early on, kind of grade 11, you know, towards the end of high school.
Okay.
I hadn't even entered my, I think as I was going into matric, I had already decided that sports journalism is what I wanted to do. So just very grateful that it all worked out, you know, then studied in Maritzburg and did, you know, media and communications degree and an honors degree in journ. But had to wait a long time for a door to open or a chance, you know, and because it's so cutthroat and competitive out there and the industry as a whole, you know, certainly back then there weren't, and it was actually the 2010 FIFA World Cup opened up new opportunities for some journos.
Yeah.
I was tasked with covering all of the color and fan hype and, you know, ticket sales and all the stuff on the streets and restaurants around the 2010 World Cup in Durban, and did that for 3 months and then kind of launched it.
Okay.
So, you know, you hear the, how, when the politicians tell you that 2010 created all of these jobs and you go, well, where are they now? You know, I don't know that I would have actually gotten in if it wasn't for the World Cup. So no, very, very grateful. And then, you know, we do the News 24 team without, you know, using this as a punt or whatever, but I mean, just such a passionate group of journalists who love what they do.
Yeah.
It's the line between work and pleasure is so blurred.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you get to be in those stadiums and watching the stuff, and you get to, you're tasked with this responsibility of then, you know, telling the country what happened in this game. Or, I mean, it really is quite something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those, like, you get to do it. You don't have to do it. Like, you get to do this job. You don't have to do this job.
Oh, don't get me wrong. There's still days, you know.
I'm sure. But
it's okay. A lot of fun.
Do you have any favorite like sports writers that you just always read?
They're all our guys, man.
Oh, really? No internationals. Nick Hornby wrote. Did you ever read Fever Pitch?
Yeah,
by Nick Hornby. I read it last year. I thought it was fantastic. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we've got my kind of mentor from the early days was a writer called Kungani Zama, who I worked with at the Natal Witness, and just, you know, the creativity in that man's fingers is insane. And the words he comes up with, you know, I've been reading him since the beginning. He was definitely an inspiration before I was even in the industry, and he was writing columns. I used to read him a lot, and very fortunate now that we've got him on as a regular columnist for News 24. So if I had to pick, you know, kind of my favorite South African writer in the industry, it would be him.
Okay. Well, I genuinely could go on and on and on. I have a lot of questions, but thank you for joining me. Both of your books are available for purchase online and in stores. So grab your copies. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Cheers.